One of the big annual events in our town is the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival, which kicks off this weekend with a keynote performance, I'm told. Not a keynote address, but a keynote performance by this woman right here, who you know from more than three decades on TV, all the way back to Laugh-In, and these days playing the president's executive secretary, Debbie Federer, Fitterer, on the West Wing. Here is Lily Tomlin. Hi, Lily.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because I hear that West Wing music come up, and it just sounds so, you know, grand and eloquent and deep and high flown.
Should I have used something goofier for you?
No, I loved it. By its very nature, and then you sang, and here she is.
Makes it sound like something really important is coming up, doesn't it?
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I like about the show.
Me too. I adore the show. I'm thrilled.
How did you end up on the show?
When I saw the show on the air, I thought, how did I not get on this show? This is like heartbreaking. So I just said to my agent, I said, tell them, please, can I do a guest shot on the show? Anything. And never knowing, you never know if you get rejected or not. So you just have that's the actor's life.
Yep.
So anyway, pretty soon, some time passed, and then Tommy Schlamme came to. I was doing a revival of one of my shows in New York, and Tommy Schlamme was sitting near a friend in a house seat, and he overheard Tommy say, Lily would be great on the show, and so then I really went out. I think they liked me, and so they were trying to find a place where I might fit in, and Mrs. Landingham had died, but her character had died, and I never dreamed to try to step into Mrs. Landingham's shoes, and of course they waited a whole year before they replaced her.
So it wasn't like you had, I want that job, kill that actress off.
Oh, gosh. Well, I am powerful, Paul, so I don't know. I could have had some influence psychically, I don't know.
Yeah, now how is it working on the show in the post-Aaron Sorkin years?
It's been great. I mean, Aaron created such a vivid, strong template for everything, and many of the writers have been working for 3 years with Aaron, and I think there was a little bit of a transition, but I think they're doing a great job. This season is really exciting.
And I got to ask you, because I'm a fan not only of yours but of the show. I've seen them all, and I'm watching it last night, and now Leo's had this heart attack, and we don't know what's going to happen. But here's my educated guess. C.J. Craig becomes the chief of staff. Am I right?
Well, as Mrs. Beasley would say, well. you could be right. You could be onto something. But, you know, he said, what did he say? It was pretty clear last night because he says, I'm going to ask you to jump off a bridge.
Right. Yeah, it's got to be her. So now here's the other question. You signed on this show. You've been on it a couple of years now. It seems to me to be the last year of the Bartlett administration. What happens to Debbie Fitterer when Martin Sheen loses his job?
Well, don't you think Debbie Fitterer is worried about that?
I would think she is.
I'm like more than worried. I said to Martin yesterday, we were playing, and I said, well, gosh, I guess when you go, that means I'll be going. But, you know, he didn't cop to the fact that he'd be going.
Oh, I see.
Maybe he'll have he could put on a mustache and a little beard or something, or bleach his hair, make his hair red, or he could be somebody else. I imagine I would, but that doesn't mean it's going to be over this season. Don't assume that, Paul.
You're right. It was an assumption, and perhaps it's a bad one. I was just trying to trick you into telling me something about one of my favorite shows. That's all
no,
it was.
No, you know, we don't know that far ahead.
Oh, you don't?
You know, we're now, that was the third show that aired last night, and we were just now shooting the 10th and part of the 11th show. And, of course, things have happened, but nothing that would really tip you off to the entire season me.
When you go on to a show like this as an actress, do you need to know backstory about your character?
Well, I usually invent my own backstory. I told, and then I tried to get Aaron at the time when I first went on, then I would try to get Aaron to write to it. You know, I said, here's my idea. So because she was, Aaron had already said she was a professional gambler and she had raised alpacas and she had this very impressive resume, but she'd gotten fired from the White House. And that was a point of real humiliation for her. And that's why she kind of went into hiding and became an alpaca farmer and then tried gambling and so on.
Yeah.
So I figured her husband, who had been briefly with her husband, had been a lobbyist, a low-grade lobbyist who doesn't really, he married her for influence because she had White House connections and other people. You know, he just knew she kind of traveled on the fringes of that circle.
Uh-huh.
And so he's the one who taught her how to gamble, because he probably went to Vegas a lot, and they would fly to Vegas or Atlantic City or whatever from D.C. And in fact, I had a car dealer who had a school for dealers. He came to my house and taught. That's how I could. Did you ever see me do that one hand cut?
Yes, I have.
I don't remember. I did it twice in the show, but I think it only showed once.
Yeah.
That's another thing that is heartbreaking for an actor.
So I
cannot shuffle or deal sharp, you know.
Yeah.
But I could master that one hand cut. So.
And you actually had somebody come to the house, a professional, teach you how to do that?
Yeah, I wanted to be able to deal because we had that poker game
right.
later, you know.
Yeah.
But I never could, like, you know how people go flip those cards around.
Yeah.
And do those big. But I'll tell you, more people were impressed that I could do a one hand cut.
It was
a lot of people can shuffle and deal.
Right, right. Well, nice going.
Was that a pretty exciting story?
Well, when you throw yourself into the role, you're not only making a backstory, you're hiring stray dealers off the Vegas Strip.
Well, that's true. and he told me great stories about when he'd been a dealer for like 30 years at the Desert Inn or the Stardust or someplace. I can't remember now. He was a very nice guy. But the best part was I went out to alpaca farms, too. To see what it was like to be an alpaca farmer.
Even though it wasn't going to have a role on the show, it was just going to be a couple of lines.
But, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So I thought, because at one time they had actually toyed with the idea that I would have like an alpaca or two like in my backyard.
Wow.
If
you're doing this for a supporting role, I can't imagine what you must do when you're the lead.
It's all the same.
Oh, yeah?
There are, as they say, there are no small roles, only long loafs.
Can I take you back a few years to 1973? Because Lorne Michaels just got the Mark Twain Award, which you got last year, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you two actually have a connection that goes back to 1973 when he worked on your TV show at the time. Am I correct?
Yes, right. Yes, I hired him as a writer.
And then
my next special, he and Jane Wagner, my partner, they produced the show.
And in fact, many of the people who worked on those specials of yours after you had left Laugh-In and were starting to do these specials for the networks, they were the people who became the basis of the writing staff for Saturday Night Live, weren't they?
Some of them, yes. And some of the actors, too. I mean, we had already, Chris Guest was on one of our shows.
Mm-hmm.
Who later did, you know, Waiting for Guffman and Best in Show and all that, and he's married to Jamie Lee Curtis.
Right.
Because Jane Wagner has a very sharp eye for talent, and she had seen The Lemmings in New York, and we tried to get John Belushi.
For your TV show?
Yeah, because there were a couple of kids that were really great, and then some of the Canadian kids, I mean, were acquaintances of Lorne's, Danny, of course, but Danny never came on our specials. But that's where I met that whole gang of people.
Why didn't you do more of those? Why wasn't there a full-time weekly Lily Tomlin show?
Well, you know, they always thought they were just too far out. They thought they were too highfalutin, I guess. And I said, no, what are you talking about? In fact, I said to Mike Eisner, who was then at ABC, because I had done this one special, and they weren't even going to air. They were going to air it in the they did air it in the summer, actually. They didn't even want to run it off in regular season. And I said, Mike, look, I can remember I was in a payphone and I was just pleading with him. I was saying, look, you're going to put like 14, 20 new shows on the air this season. This was back in 73 or 4 or 5. And I said, why don't you take, and half of them are going to fail anyway. Why don't you take a chance? You could take all the credit for it. You could say, this is an unusual show, blah, 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 whatever. But we want to support new stuff or new artists and so on. I said, you can take all the credit and then I'll take all the blame if it fails. But at least I would have gotten like 13 weeks in a studio. It's like being on a playground.
Yep.
You have that studio to play in. No, I did 6 specials. I did 2 at CBS, 2 at ABC back. I went back to CBS and did 2 more.
Do you think the resistance was because it was before Saturday Night Live? If you had been doing your stuff after Saturday Night Live, when television had changed a little bit, they would have been more receptive to you?
Maybe. I don't know. Part of what they like in a show is constant repetition. And I said, but it's supposed to be a variety show, so it should have a lot of variety. Every week it would have some variety, you know, mm-hmm. not that you go. And I have plenty of characters that could have. Here I sound like I'm pleading my case here. It's like 30 years ago. So
I love the inside workings of the industry. That's why I'm curious about
this.
Yeah,
no, I do too. I do too. In fact, I would always, and I never had any like real, I mean, I lost stuff from the censor and things like that. But it's not because to me, they're acting out of their own sensibility and survival as a corporation. They think they have to do such and such. But I got very smart because George Slaughter on Laugh-In taught me how to bargain for material. You shoot two things that you know they don't want, and then you give up one of them, and they let you keep at least half of it.
As long as they have something to cut that will leave.
Yeah, as long as they, that's right, exactly. As long as you acquiesce to something, then they're much happier. And I'm, even though it's fairly costly to tape stuff that you're going to cut, you do it anyway to get something on the air.
Yeah. Now, speaking of TV, you used to do the Carson Show all the time, and I don't see you doing Letterman and Leno. Why is that?
Well, I did. I've done Leno and Letterman a lot in the earlier days. I just haven't done that much talk. I just don't do that much anymore. I mean, I just don't seem to do that much television. You know, it's just the way of it. I can't remember. The last time I was on Letterman was probably a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been on there lately. You're right.
What was your relationship like with Carson during those years?
Nothing particular. I'm shy, and so is he, kind of. And so it was always pleasant on the air. I didn't really have any real association with him off the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd come to your dressing room and always greet you and say hello. But I always had that sense that he was so private, I never intruded on it.
But yet on the air, you could play like crazy.
Yeah, we could have fun, you know. Sure, because that's what you're there for, and he was certainly very comfortable in front of the camera.
Lily Tomlin here on the Paul Harris Show. It's the Paul Harris Show, rolling along through this Thursday afternoon, and talking with Lily Tomlin. Yes, Lily Tomlin from The West Wing as Debbie Fitterer, all the way back to the days of Laugh-In as Edith Ann and as Ernestine, and she's coming to town this weekend to be the keynote speaker at the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival Saturday night at 6 o'clock. And the number for tickets, we've been getting a lot of calls, Lily. People want to come see you. 314-442-3299.
That reminded me, when you said Ernestine, you were talking about Carson. I remember one time I went on Carson dressed as Ernestine, you know, in character.
Uh-huh.
And Carson started, you know, kind of teasing her about and taunting her about the fact that she would have her hand in her blouse a lot.
Yep.
And I said, and just luckily, it was the one time he happened to have his hands in his lap. And I said, as Ernestine, I said, I noticed that your hands are not visible here on the desktop. You know, I think that's about the only time I ever really broke him up.
That's a great line. Was Ernestine ever offered telephone company commercials?
Oh, God, in the beginning, yes. She was offered a huge, first of all, talking about behind-the-scene workings and all that, at NBC, when we were doing Laugh-In, the phone company had heard about this telephone operator that I was doing, and I didn't go on the air for about 6 or 7 weeks when I started taping, and they started sending people down to the studio to watch what she was doing, because they thought she was going to be ridiculing the phone company, which she was, and they were just really giving NBC and Laugh-In a hard time, but then as soon as she went on the air and she was so popular, they made an offer to her to do commercials.
That does tend to turn people's head. Popularity, success.
But I was so in earnest in those days. You know, I mean, really, and thinking of myself as a satirist and my own politics and everything. When my manager called me up and told me about it, and it was I was making about $7.50 a week on Laugh-In, and they offered me a lot of money, and I burst into tears. I was so hurt and insulted.
Because it wasn't enough money, or because you'd have to turn your back on your art?
My art. I thought that's it. Today, I would be bursting into tears because it wasn't enough money. But no, just kidding. But I kind of. But I was so hurt. You know, I was felt so violated that, and then I felt ineffectual as a satirist too. I thought, well, they just think they can just buy my character than an exploiter. You know.
Yeah.
and so on. Oh, it's so wonderful to be young like that. You know? It really is.
Did you ever...
beautiful thing.
Did you ever try to do anything with Edith Ann beyond laughing? I heard a rumor years ago that you were trying to either do, and I don't know what it was, either a stage show or a TV show for children with Edith Ann. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, well, I did 3 animated specials with Edith and actually won a Peabody for one of them.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and on ABC I did 3 animated specials. They're really good, too. A couple of years ago, I had an Edith Ann puppet made, very fantastic puppet with radio-operated eyes, you know, and tongue, because I wanted to be able to interact with her. She's like the size of a 3-year-old, a 6-year-old. She's 3 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still hoping to get, employment for that puppet.
How about the Edith Ann and Ernestine show or commercial for a telephone company together?
Well, hey, golly, from your lips.
If the money's right, forget the art. If the money's
right. Ma Bell doesn't even exist anymore. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah. you mentioned the Peabody Award. I went through a listing of your career here. This is pretty remarkable, talking about awards here. An Oscar for Nashville.
No, I only got a nomination.
Yeah, I'm running just through the nominations here.
I'm sorry.
An Oscar for Nashville, about 13 Emmy nominations, including 6 wins, 4 American Comedy Awards, including a Lifetime Achievement, 2 Tony Awards for Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, a Golden Globe, plus I couldn't count how many nominations through the years, and, of course, the Mark Twain Award last year. Now, when somebody has won that many things, I wonder, does it ever get old?
No, I don't think so. It doesn't get old at all. I mean, you're always... I mean, I think you have perspective about it, but I think the pleasure and joy of doing something. I'll tell you, Trey, frankly, there is an element of you fear winning as much as you fear losing.
What do you mean?
Well, because it's, I don't know, it happens, you win, and then it's sort of like, is that all there is? And also, you kind of don't like to be, you don't want to be singled out amongst 4 or 5 other, exceptional performances.
Particularly in all the ensemble work you've done, I would think that would be true.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's a funny story. That's why I've often satirized that, too. When I got nominated for Nashville, I went to the Oscars. I wanted to go dressed as a 50s movie star because that would be sort of my, my genesis with the Oscars as a kid.
Yep.
Watching it and being totally enthralled and being such a huge cultural event. So I went over to NBC Wardrobe and I got a silver knit dress with sequins all over it, and so it's real stretchy, kind of a Marilyn Monroe kind of dress,
Yep.
And I had big white fox furs and long gloves, shoulder, elbow length gloves, and lots of rhinestones, and I padded my body so it would be really curvaceous, but realistic, and I wore a tiara, and then I went to the Oscars with Bob Altman, and the director, and he loved it. I mean, he got such a kick out of it, because he knows you're kind of sending it up, and yet at the same time, to go to all that trouble, you're doing it you're absolutely infatuated and totally in love. And because I planned to have big old big Harlequin sunglasses, and if I won, I was going to say, some of you will say I've gone Hollywood. you always have some little shtick in mind.
Right.
Of course, I didn't win that year. I didn't win at all. But the next morning, Mr. Blackwell said, because you could see me on the TV, my little tiara is like tipped half the time. I look like Edith Ann at a birthday party. And Mr. Blackwell says on Good Morning, and he looks right out of the camera, and he says, and Lily Tomlin, we don't wear tiaras. And then another time I went to the Emmys, or I got nominated for Ernestine did this takeoff on Flashdance. She did this huge, big musical number, and it was really funny. It was, so I got nominated, and I petitioned the Academy. I said, no, Ernestine got nominated, not me. Don't you understand? Ernestine is the one who's nominated. Well, they wouldn't do it, Lily Tomlin as Ernestine. So I went to the Emmys dressed as Ernestine, but really fabulous, because the notion is that she has got so many taped conversations on people from all her years at the phone company that she could blackmail anybody and get anything she wants.
Uh-huh.
And so I had a big dress, made by the Bob Mackie people.
Wow.
All white beads and with a candlestick phone worked into it. And I went with two, I had 2 limos and 2 guys in livery. and I had two Borzoi hounds, and I had my own film crew. This is Ernestine. See, I'm even blurring the line here. And so what we do when we get out of the, when the car pulls up to the red carpet, and my driver gets out, he opens the door for me, and then another livery guy gets out of the second limo where the film crew is, and he presents me with these two big hounds, you know, these big, beautiful Hollywood, from the old days looking hounds. And Ernestine just takes the leash and presents herself, you know.
Yeah.
Like an old star.
Wow.
And anyway, I had, and then the film crew is, and the only thing I didn't do, see, these are the things you regret, is I was going to have somebody dressed as Vito, the repairman. You know, it would say Communication Workers of America on the back, and I was going to have him playing the trumpet and running ahead of me and playing Reach Out and Touch Someone. And so here's me, I'm saying, well, I don't know, maybe that's a little too much.
Yeah, yeah. That,
and it, but it wasn't. It was exactly what I should have done. And it would have been so much fun, you know. To, it's always good to have accompaniment.
Absolutely, absolutely.
While we're, I tried to, you get me excited about some old thing like this. This is what turns me on the most.
Well, that's okay.
And I tried to get Gordon Liddy to be my date.
Gordon Liddy?
Yeah, I called up his people and everything, and I think he was almost going to do it, and then I, because I figured he and Ernestine had done a lot of work together, you know, over the years.
Taping things without people's knowing it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's always so funny.
Do you always think of all of your characters in the third person?
Yeah, pretty much I do. I mean, I like to think that they're out there living in the world, you know.
Mm-hmm. So Debbie Fitterer. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right. You said
I was going to say
Debbie Fitterer.
Debbie Fitterer and Ernestine and Edith Ann and all of your other characters, the incredible shrinking woman. They're all separate people in your mind?
Well, some of them, not all of them. Some of them are more, you know, like Debbie, I don't think of her living somewhere else.
Oh.
I mean, I think of her, you know, I'm an actor filling a part in someone else's, for someone else's vision. But the characters that I invented are like people to me.
Mm-hmm. Does that make it easier when you're on stage and you're doing a show like Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, which you've done several times for many, many years through the 90s especially, and you've brought back a couple of times? Does it help you on stage to think, okay, now I'm moving into her thing and then this person's thing?
Well, when I'm doing it, yes, I kind of think the person, I think I'm looking like the person I'm doing, even though I'm always surprised. Like when I would do Edith on Laugh-In in the old days, I'd be in the rocking chair, and I would think I was this kind of little, you know, little short, with a short neck and small hands, and then I'd suddenly see one of my hands would flash in front of my eyes, and I'd say, well, that's not Edith's hand. And it wasn't the way I would imagine it, you know, in my mind. But, I mean, that's what actors do when they really do think that they're embodying. I think they think that anyway.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit about the new movie. tell me a little bit about the new movie, I Heart Huckabees, you and Dustin Hoffman as husband and wife.
Right. We play existential detectives who, solve people's life questions and what is the meaning of life, what am I doing here, other little puzzlements like trying to figure out, deconstruct their personalities and their belief systems so that they can open up to something new, and it's really all just the absurdity of being a human and trying to make sense out of what does life mean and what doesn't it mean, and to me it's extremely funny and tender about species.
What is Hoffman like to work with?
He's an absolute adorable guy. You just flip for him, really. He's so sweet, funny, menschy, and I was a little nervous. I mean, I'd met him a couple times, but I thought, oh, he's going to be so intense and serious, and I'm going to be intimidated because, you know, he has an extraordinary film career,
mm-hmm.
and he's been nominated 7 times and won 2 Oscars, and he's just an extraordinary actor. So anyway, he's totally the opposite. In fact, he's so much fun and so menschy. And I said to him, and he loves jokes better than anything. And I said to him, you know, you might as well be Shecky Green, because he's so completely like, you know, he would have been good in vaudeville.
Oh yeah.
He's just fun. He's just a lot of fun and very warm and really likes people and gets involved in everybody's business. He's always fixing people up on the set. If he sees any young person that seems unattached, he wants to know if they've got a job and if they've got an education yet, and if they found anybody that, you know, to keep them company. And He's just very cute.
While we're talking about movies, can I ask you about another one of your co-stars by the name of Art Carney?
Oh, yeah, God.
You worked together in The Late Show.
Yes, The Late Show. That was my second movie. Altman also produced that movie. Bob Benton directed it. And it was Bob Benton's second movie. And it was my second movie. And, of course, Art's been around much longer. He had been around. That was another great thing to work with him. And Bill Macy, too. I just love that old threesome. I thought they were really funny and interesting.
That was a wonderful movie. And I was actually looking around the other day at movies that I loved that you never hear about anymore, and that was one of those that kind of flew under the radar, and then it burst onto the scene, and then since then, people haven't seen it for a while. I know it's out on DVD. I want to go back and take a look at it. Do you ever do that with your old movies, go back and take a look at them?
Once in a while, not very often, but I'm always promising myself, I'm going to sit down and look at everything so I can see what I do well and what I don't do and what I can improve and what kind, you know, like, and try to remember how I arrived. If I do something really well, say, try to remember how I arrived at it.
And,
and just try to and perfect your, you know, your craft. But I never do it. I mean, I'm always thinking of doing it. Now that you brought up Late Show, now I need to go back and see that again. I have very vivid memories of certain scenes, though, because it was the first big part I had. I was in Nashville, but it wasn't that large a part, even though I was nominated. And then Late Show, I was really, you know, a co-star with Art. And it was, and everybody loved Ed Norton.
Yeah.
And Carney, and Art Carney was just, and he was such a, he was also a very nice man, you know, and wanted to be, you know, appreciated on the set, and wanted to entertain people, and he'd play the piano, and because there happened to be piano on the set, and just lots of stuff. He was a really, really special guy.
Well, I wish we had time to talk about more of these things. All of me.
Yeah,
with
I've
Steve
been very
Martin
fortunate. And, you know, I have worked with a lot of wonderful people.
It's been a terrific, just looking through the list of things you've done is pretty darn impressive here, Lily. Now, what are you going to be?
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. What are you going to be doing Saturday night when you come to the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival? What's your keynote address?
I'm going to really do a performance, you know, but my stuff is always, you know, fairly socially relevant. And so I'll do a lot. I'll probably do 10 or 12 characters and a lot of the old classic characters and, you know, with relevant material. And I'll do Ernestine and Edith and Mrs. Beasley and Lud and Marie and Sister Boogie Woman and the world's oldest living beauty expert and talk about St. Louis and talk about what's going on.
Wonderful.
And, you know, it's much more informal because I'm not doing a play.
Right. Well, people can get tickets to see you Saturday night at 6 o'clock at the JCC here in town at 314-442-3299.
It's very nice of you. It's a great organization, and they deserve to be supported.
Well, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. Hope we can do it again sometime and get to some of these other folks and other things you've done in your amazing career.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Lily. Lily Tomlin here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.